I think when the news first came out that there was some evidence that we had a pandemic going around, you know, obviously everyone's concerned about essential workers, and certainly for those of us in the water department, you know, we've got 150 or so employees, and we certainly are essential because we provide water, drinking water, and fire protection to the 100,000 city residents, and we also provide collection of wastewater, and we convey that to the county wastewater treatment plant. So we were pretty concerned early on that it was important for us to make sure that our folks stayed healthy. And so how are we going to do that? There was a lot of uncertainty on how this was being transmitted. So I think initially following the CDC guidance, we were concerned that any of the transmission was likely going to be through some, you know, inhalation or getting it on your face, eyes, that type of thing. So our folks are pretty used to wearing personal protective equipment. We all have, you know, face masks. So we immediately told our guys, hey, when you're out working, make sure you've got face mask protection on. And our guys are used to wearing gloves if you're working in and around the sanitary sewers, because obviously anything that can be pathogenic can be transmitted in the sewers. Folks also had questions whether or not COVID is in drinking water. But then again, recognize that most pathogens and viruses and bacteria are killed by chlorine, and we certainly chlorinate our water, and it gets additional protection up in the Loudonville Reservoir. We have ultraviolet disinfection. So we weren't really concerned, and we were able to quickly provide that information to our customers, and that was also supported by information coming out from the health department, Dr. Whalen in Albany County, EPA, the CDC. Were pretty much relaying the same message. Don't worry about your drinking water. But for us, you know, so the question is, how do we keep our folks safe? So back in March, when everybody kind of shut down, we sent everybody home. So our office people, you know, we can work from home for the most part. We have laptops. We can connect to the network, and a lot of our information's in the cloud. But our blue-collar workers are the ones that are out there operating and maintaining the sewer and water systems. We have folks at our water treatment plant. We have security people. All those people need to work. So what we did is we essentially rotated our crews. For example, if we have two crews on our water transmission maintenance, we'd have one crew work for a week, and then we'd have one crew stay home, and we would alternate them. That way, if one crew member got sick or got exposed and we had to put the other folks in quarantine for a time frame, we weren't going to be out of dodge. We still had other folks that could work. So we really did that for the first 3 or 4 weeks. And we had, frankly, ironically, we had one COVID positive case, like right early the first week that this went on. So that immediately put 9 or 10 of our folks into a two-week quarantine. Thankfully, nobody else became infected, and we were all really back to work. You know, they were back to work in the first part of April. But about mid-April, we really were able to find, with wearing the PPE and as more information came out about how the disease is likely transmitted, we brought people back to work, but we were trying to keep one person per vehicle. Everybody was wearing face masks all the time. We had a mandatory face mask requirement in any common area in our facilities, in the garage areas, and that seemed to work pretty well. And honestly, we had pretty good cooperation from all of our staff people. They realized that it was intended to be for their safety and the safety of their families. And, you know, you don't always know what everybody else is doing outside the work hours. So it's pretty, as an act of ultimate precaution, we had mandatory face masks. And we've been doing that all along. And at the treatment plant, we kind of changed our shifts around and had some people that, you know, operate. We can maintain some social distancing at the plant. So we had people working, you know, a little bit further apart than normal and all wearing face protection. So for the, as more information came out from CDC about how the disease was transmitted, we felt pretty confident that we had a mechanism in place to protect our staff people. And any interaction we had with contractors, we required them to pretty much follow a standard protocol that they had to wear face masks, et cetera. And then in probably early May, about the second week in May, we had acquired some infrared thermometers. So we did some additional screening. So every person coming into our building, all employees at the beginning of every shift, we do a scan of their foreheads with an IR thermometer. And, you know, if you're over a certain number, we'd send you home. If not, you know, you kind of come into work and you'd answer that health screen, or you have a cough or sore throat, muscle aches, anything that would likely be in association with the COVID. So we've been running that protocol since we started, and knock on wood, we've been blessed that we haven't had any additional issues. People that thought they had symptoms, we told them to stay home. They got tested. When they were negative, they returned to work. We've been pretty conservative, and it's worked well for us. So that's pretty much where we're at. And the building had been shut down to the public right from March 15th. So there was no more coming in to pay your bills in person, no more coming in for fishing permits, picking up water meters. We went to a pretty much everybody paid bills either online or they could phone the information in, and we would take payments over the phone. And that went seamlessly. We, you know, we haven't missed a beat on that. Same thing, we just allowed people, if the fishing permits expired, we said, hey, they're good till the end of June. But once we got the infrared thermometers, we put some plexiglass up in our customer service. We went to a very limited staffing in the office, where if we had four people or five people working in our finance group, we'd only have two, maybe maximum of three in at any one time. And the same goes with customer service. So even with face masks on, we could still had appropriate separation. But now we did open the office up. Any visitor coming in, they get their temperature taken. It's by appointment only, so we can do fishing permits. We can do some transactional issue if it's required. We can work with contractors to pick up hydrant meters, but it's pretty much on a very regimented and restricted basis. A couple things we've learned. We've had all of our office engineering people working from home, our GIS people working from home remotely, and I'm so glad that we started doing so much of our work in the cloud. Not having a lot of local servers, everybody has laptops, access to the internet, and we can pretty much be as productive, and in some cases maybe more productive, working remotely than we have been in working in the building. And if one thing has been a godsend, it's been Zoom, our ability to use the Zoom platform for meetings with our office staff, with our boards, with members of the public. We did a presentation last night to a couple of neighborhood associations. That's been a blessing. So we've been lucky, Dave. I think in hindsight, looking back over the past 3 months, we haven't missed a beat, and I'm really proud of how our blue-collar workers, particularly in our foreman, have responded to this. We've had some people have come in and worked every day since March 15th, reported every day, haven't missed a beat. Our security people, our water treatment plant operators, maintenance folks, the folks that are working in our water and sewer units, these guys and gals have really showed up and carried the flag every day. We're very proud of what they do, and they've certainly represented the city and the water department in a positive manner, and we've been able to continue to provide great potable water to our residents and the institutions. Imagine what would have happened if we had issues and we couldn't get water to Albany Med or St. Pete's or the other health centers. That would not have been a good time with all this other activity going on. So it's been challenging, but our folks have risen to the occasion.
So right now, Joe, how's the infrastructure? I know we had some problems a couple of years ago where there were a couple of major water main breaks. I remember there was that big one there on South Lake where the car got swallowed up. What's the current status of our infrastructure?
Well, you know, it's interesting that you raise that. You know, Dave, that was actually in 2017. That was 3 years ago. But we still have, with the infrastructure we have, we still have water main breaks all the time. In fact, we probably had more water main breaks last year than we have had in the 6 years that I've been the commissioner. And this happens for a variety of reasons. Sometimes we just get there could be some operation in the system that the hydrant may get shut quickly, or some other activity in the system will change the pressure quickly, and that causes water hammer, that causes a main break. And sometimes when you have a main break in an area and you repair it, the fact that we've had some water moving in different directions and different pressures, that may tend to cause a couple other breaks, you know, in a relatively short time frame around that same area. So we've still had a lot of main breaks, but we've been able to respond and keep people in service. Thankfully, most of the main breaks we have, we don't lose a lot of water service. But we also had a couple of instances this year where we've had leaks on our transmission main coming into the city that, you know, we have to shut down to fix those. And when we do that, now we do have an emergency interconnect with the Latham Water District that helps us, provides confidence that we can make repairs in a timely fashion but not have to hurry them, because we know we're going to have sufficient supply and not have to worry about any kind of rationing or other issues with not having enough water to send. At the same time, we have looked at upping our capital program. We do five-year capital plans. In the last 3 or 4 years, that five-year plan has been running about $100 million or $20 million a year. Last year, our capital investments in our water and sewer system amounted to nearly $29 million. That's been the most that has spent probably since the Water Board had taken the system over in the late 1980s. There's been substantial investment in the system in the last 6 years, and that's going to continue. Some of that, as you know, it's been prompted by the consent order to abate combined sewer overflows into the Hudson River. Our major project, the Beaver Creek Clean River Project, is actually in final design. That's going to go out to bid this year, start construction next year, and be completed in 18 months or so. That's a $45 million project. So we've also been fortunate to get a lot of grant money that's offset some of these costs, which obviously are a relief to our ratepayers, because that minimizes the rate increases that we have to pay for these capital improvements. So we're getting a lot done, but a lot needs to get done. For example, for folks that have drive around the OGS Harriman campus, there's been some construction around there. We just built a large sewage pump station around the ring road that's going to allow us to take 3 million gallons a day of wastewater, dry weather flow from the campus in SUNY, take that out of the Beaver Creek combined system and send it over to the Patroon Creek. That gives us more capacity in the Beaver Creek combined sewer system, and that's quite a help. Also, if people have been driving up around Colvin Avenue, we've had a lot of cones up there for a while. We just are completing a water booster pump station that will connect to a new tank. We built a 1 million gallon tank on the Harriman campus, working with OGS, and that's going to help us increase pressures up in the upper Washington Avenue area heading out towards SUNY and Fuller Road. So we continue to make these improvements in the system with, you know, all of our, so much of our water mains that are predating 1900. We can't replace all these mains. So we're targeting certain projects that have more frequent breaks or other deficiencies, and we're moving to replace those mains on an annual basis. This year we're doing a project on Orange Street. We're doing one on Winnie Street. We're going to do some work up on Bethlehem Terrace. So those are the kind of projects we're doing to slowly make sure that we strengthen the system and do as much improvements as we can to mitigate some of the aging issues that we have.
Joe, what about the quality of our water? Albany's already always had and has been known to have good water quality. Is there anything that's changing? I know people were saying Albany doesn't add fluoride to the water. I'm just, you know, wondering if there's going to be or has been any change to the composition of the water as it comes from the reservoir.
Well, Dave, as you know, we have the alcove reservoir has been in place since 1929, 1930. It's an outstanding water supply source for the city. It's one of the best supply sources in the Northeast, and we work very hard to keep it that way. We just completed an initiative with the Nature Conservancy and the Mohawk Hudson Land Conservancy to put all of our watershed around the alcove and Basic Creek reservoirs in a permanent conservation easement to ensure that we have that sustainable quality in the years to come. We also, as part of that, we have a program that we develop and market carbon credits that we can sell to provide some income back to the Water Board to help us reinvest in efforts to maintain the quality of the watershed, which really makes the water quality of the alcove as good as it is. A lot of people were concerned about PFOA, PFOS 3 or 4 years ago. That's generally going to be an issue where you've got some contributors that are in the watershed area. We don't have that in the alcove, and we actually tested our reservoir when that first came up a couple, 3 years ago, and There's no, not detected, there's no evidence of that in the reservoir. We do extensive sampling, extensive monitoring of the water quality in the alcove. In fact, we're out there sampling it today as part of our routine program. We monitor the trends in organic carbon. We look for any potential algae blooms. We now have drones that have detectors that we can fly over the alcove to help us seek out any emerging issues before they really get to grow. So I want to compliment Amy Walsh, who is our watershed manager. She and her crew of environmental scientists work pretty hard, and they're very professional. And I think we can certainly be confident that our water quality in the alcove is going to continue for a long time.
Joe, there have been a couple of projects, the major ones that involve water. One of them I know is that, you know, that the whole thing about Lincoln Park and redoing that. There was the bioswale that didn't come to pass, but there were some changes made to Ramsey Place. And at the bottom of Ramsey Place in Albany, there's Hackett Boulevard. A lot of people, you know, they've got the folk legend that underneath Hackett Boulevard, there's a raging stream or river of some sort. And I myself noticed the other day there was a sewer and stenciled underneath the or beside the sewer was a picture of a fish, and it said drains to streams. So clear up some of these urban water legends for us.
Well, it's not really a legend. It's the truth. In fact, under Hackett Boulevard, before Hackett Boulevard was paved, and if you go back and look at old USGS or topographic maps in the late 1800s, you can see the blue line stream that runs up the current quarter of Hackett Boulevard up towards Manning, and that was actually a tributary to the Beaver Creek. There was multiple tributaries to the Beaver Creek. All of those tributaries to the Beaver Creek are now large combined trunk sewers that are part of the Beaver Creek combined sewer system that flows down through Lincoln Park. And that was, again, a stream, part of where Washington Park Lake is. That was a tributary of the Beaver Creek that flowed up through Elberon, up past Ontario, and up towards Albany High School. So all of those, which were open streams when the city was not developed, were piped, and they were piped to convey sanitary sewage down to the Hudson River before they had treatment. And they were combined because it also took the normal rainwater that was in those stream beds and took that down to the Hudson as well. So it's not a legend, it's a fact. And again, where people, we sometimes get these horrific torrential downpours, and we see where Hackett Boulevard will flood in some of the low areas. Well, it would have flooded there when we had those rain events because that was where the stream banks were, and that's the floodplain of that Beaver Creek tributary. And as you contain that into a pipe that's maybe 5 or 6 feet in diameter, there's only so much water that can convey. So one of the things that projects that we did, like in Ramsey Place, it might not have been a bioswell, but we did other green infrastructure. So we took porous concrete panels along the curbs where the rainwater can then enter into those porous panels and it flows under these tree pits that we did on both sides of the street, that we can actually hold back and store some of that water before it goes into the combined sewer. So we can hold back about 150,000 gallons of stormwater from going into the combined sewer on Hackett Boulevard when there's so much flow into the sewer that it couldn't really accept that additional water. So you do more and more of those projects, then we can mitigate and hopefully at some point eliminate the flooding that we have on Hackett. And we also plan to do more work on Hackett Boulevard, maybe a little bit farther up where we've got the median up towards Cardinal and up towards Weiss Road to try to do more actual online detention and storage on Hackett Boulevard of the separated stormwater up in that area before it gets into the combined sewer. So those are a couple initiatives that we're working on that are in the planning process. The stenciling that you see on these storm sewer inlets is to remind people that these sewers, these catch basin and inlets are part of a combined sewer that they're going to go ultimately to the Hudson River. And some of them are in separate sewers that don't get, you know, they go directly to a water body. Some go to ponds. So we're asking people, by putting that there, is don't litter. Don't throw your dog dog poo bags into the catch basins, for example, because that's only going to ultimately contaminate the water bodies that these sewers are connected to. So that's why those stencils are out there. They're put out by our stormwater manager. You see them around the Buckingham Pond neighborhood, where a lot of those separated storm sewers go directly into Buckingham Pond. You'll see the same thing where there might be some catch basins that are connected that go into Washington Park Lake. So it's an effort to try to keep the water quality in the open water bodies as clean as possible.
So looking toward the future, Joe, what is the water department working on that's going to shape Albany's future? I know there are a couple of ongoing projects, but if you could maybe enumerate them for us, that would be great.
Well, thanks, Dave, and thanks for giving us the opportunity to talk about that a little bit, because a lot of what we do, it's not always seen until there's a disaster or a big problem. But the big project for us is the Beaver Creek Clean River Project that's going to be in Lincoln Park. We'll probably have a community meeting on that later this summer before the project goes out to bid to brief everyone on the status of that project, the construction sequence. That's going to be a major undertaking to help mitigate the issues that are caused by combined sewer overflows into the Hudson River. It's also going to help us resolve some of the issues that we've had in Lincoln Park in the ravine area that would tend to burp up and blow sewage up into the ravine because there wasn't enough capacity, and we're going to fix that problem as part of this Clean River Project. That's one project that we have. We're also doing initiatives to essentially remove all the lead water services in the city. There's probably 13,000 of those. Our goal is to get them out of the system in the next 20 or 30 years. So we'll try to do 200 or 300 of those every year. We're working on a project now where a lot of folks who are familiar with downtown near the old Department of Motor Vehicles on Pearl and Arch Street, where we have the geyser that would blow the manhole covers up every time we had a significant rain. But now we've been working down there to find a mechanism to relieve that the pressure on the sewer system and mitigate that, so we're not expecting to see that be a problem every time we've got a significant rain event. A lot of what we're doing work at our water treatment plant down in Feuerbusch, which a lot of people aren't aware of, but right now we're doing renovation on the sedimentation basin roof that was built in 1930. That's starting to have some structural issues. That's being fixed. We just did upgrades of our laboratory and operations room at the water plant. We're doing a lot of things that people don't see to help maintain and improve the quality of the and maintain the quality of the drinking water we have through the city. There's just so many projects that we do. It's in the 5-year capital plan, but a lot of it's underground. And like we said, we tell people all the magic is underground, and a lot of times you don't really see it. But we want people to have confidence that every time they turn that tap on, that they're getting a pure, safe drinking water. And when they send things down through the water closets and back into the sewer, that it's going to be safely conveyed to the plant, and folks don't have to worry about it. We're trying to get rid of basement backups and street flooding. It's a journey. It doesn't happen overnight. But every project we do and every capital plan we have is committed to those sustainability and resiliency issues that we're promoting in the city.